Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Bruce, man, lots of places I think we can start the show tonight. Lots. New TNT champion in Scorpio Sky. We'll get there, but let's kick things off with Jeff Hart. Makes his AEW debut tonight, saving his brother Matt along with Sting and Darby after Andrade got the Hardy family office to turn on Matt Hardy. We got Jeff Hardy there with his old the old Hardy Boys music. Big reaction. We're gonna attack this from a couple different angles here, Bruce. But I just want to get your reaction out of the gate, just to the debut itself. I mean, what did you think of Jeff Hardy out there in an AEW ring?
Well, one, it was the worst kept secret in professional wrestling the last few weeks. So I'm surprised. Even given that, he got a really big pop. He might have had the biggest pop of the night, which. It could be seen as a good or bad, depending on what part of the roster you're looking at. So my general reaction was, one, I noted that he took a play out of Rhea Ripley's playbook and took his time and dancing down the ring instead of actually going in for the run-in. And I thought that was a little cute. But, you know, it looks like they might be eventually leading to a Darby and Sting versus Hardy Boys matchup, which, okay, it's fine, but three of those people, well, two and a half of those people at this point, I'm not really interested in watching have matches anymore. Jeff Hardy's kind of hit or miss these days for me when he's in the ring, and Darby is Darby, so that'll be fine. So it was very predictable in how this was going to happen, how his debut was going to happen. Sometimes that predictability is okay, but I wonder if this is one of those where it could have been something different. Like when Private Party held their thumbs down, you saw people looking to the entrance because they heard people go, oh, and they thought they probably didn't see the Private Party turn their thumbs down and they're looking to the entrance. So they might have just been able to go with that. But, I mean, if you're trying to get Matt Hardy into something quickly after this breakup, instead of just writing him off TV with a beatdown, which is what I think should have happened, then this is, I guess, the way to go.
Yeah, I agree, largely. I mean, the whole Hardy family office just stable as it is, it was very, very mid card, you know, even low card.
Like,
So, you know, to debut Jeff Hardy in that way, you know, I think, you know, it says kind of out of the gate, like where he might at least start out, you know, in the hierarchy of AEW, or, you know, we could also see Jeff, you know, elevate, not the Hardy family office per se, but Matt Hardy. I mean, when you look at like what's on the table for Jeff Hardy as a singles wrestler and Jeff Hardy with Matt Hardy, Hardy Boys as a tag team, I mean, there's a lot of different directions that they can take this thing. When you look at like the tag team matches that are on the horizon with Young Bucks, Red Dragon, Lucha Brothers, FTR, that's just off the top of my head right now. Singles, you've got what, Adam Cole, MJF, Darby Allin for Jeff Hardy. I mean, there's a lot of business to be had there if Jeff Hardy can still go. So to me, this feels like okay, we got to introduce Jeff Hardy in some way, and we have Matt off doing his thing with the Hardy family office. And so it's maybe going to take 2-3 steps to get to where we want to be with them as a team, because we got to get Matt out of this. So it's almost like Jeff to the rescue as far as that goes, because I think like his pairing with Matt Hardy right now is going to, you know, it's going to be probably the strongest we've seen Matt booked since he debuted on the roster. So I think I'm taking a wait and see approach here as far as the long term, you know, prospects of this. I think that, yeah, when you talk about tonight specifically, it's kind of like, okay, you're debuting this big this acquisition after it's not a well-kept secret, and you're doing it with a mid-card at best. Act, yeah, you could have put a little bit more shine on it. I just think they had a lot of things working against it, the main one being you got to get Matt out of there if you want to take that tag team down the road of all those teams that I previously named. So a lot of balls in the air with it. What is his ceiling, Bruce, in AEW right now, either tag or singles? Like, you know, how important of an acquisition is this for AEW, or is it just, hey, you know, they need talent. They got two shows, like, you know, and he's going to serve just that purpose.
Well, I think as a tag team, just like they did when they returned to WWE, they probably have a legacy title run in them. And I could see the fans getting behind that very easily because it's the Hardy Boys. And that's fine. While I don't think they should necessarily be tag team champions, especially soon, because of, as you were just talking about, the depth in the tag team division right now, I do think that's in them in the long run. I do think Matt Hardy, of everybody, needs this injection of just enthusiasm more than a lot of people off the roster right now, because, like you said, he's just been very flat for a long time. And, you know, ever since he had his debut with the broken gimmick, it all kind of – and it, of course, that terrible spot in the match with, I think it was Inner Circle, and the spot with Sammy Guevara, I think it was. It's just all kind of been downhill from there. And not in a gradual – or not in a quick way, but kind of in a precipitous way. So for him, it's good. Now, singles run, I don't think Jeff Hardy is someone that I personally would – think of putting in a world championship run. I could put him in, say, world title qualifier matches and have him put over someone, but I don't think he should be at that level. I could definitely see him competing for the TNT championship and being a TNT champion, though, there's a lot of depth, and I'm not sure if that title, because it's basically what used to be the place of the IC title in WWF in the 90s, really. So I'm not sure if he needs to be the one to use that to elevate himself more, because he's also someone who doesn't really need titles to be connected with the crowd and have the backing and just be popular.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is going to be, this is better served as a tag team with Matt Hardy, like Jeff and Matt Hardy back together, Hardy Boys. And you stay there for quite some time. And it's not necessarily because Jeff can't deliver in a big time singles feud. As I said, there's a lot of guys out there that he could work with from a singles perspective, but it's just that there are so many singles acts in AEW right now that can be playing in the AEW world title space, and especially the TNT space. And like, just to throw, you know, another person in there, it's kind of like, okay, you know, he's going to have to jump the line, you know, in front of somebody else. And so I think the value that Jeff brings, you know, to the, it's just, yeah, a face that people know for sure. I mean, that's certainly there. Clearly Jeff Hardy's somebody, or a wrestling figure that has been around for a long time that I think people genuinely are connected to. Like, it's been that way since 1999, you know, like there's just something about Jeff Hardy that resonates with people, and that's, yep, that's there. But I think the story is this tag team arc with Matt, get them back together and then just kind of have them, you know, work those matches and frame the tag team division in a bigger way. I think we've seen, especially heading into Revolution this past Sunday, you know, AEW's full of great tag teams. I mean, probably the best tag team roster in wrestling, yet you get to a pay-per-view and it's a triple threat, you know, tag team match for the tag team titles. Really good match, great match even. But, you know, you get there because you have two battle royals and it's kind of in the background of the Young Bucks Red Dragon thing. Like, you know, maybe Jeff and Matt Hardy can bring some, you know, presence to that division and kind of force Tony Khan to look at it just like he looks at the world title scene. I mean, because that they've got so much they can do with that division. It's just a bit lost right now. And maybe, you know, this team coming together, Hardy Boys reuniting, can bring some definition back to that division.
Well, and for those tag teams who aren't in the championship picture, they can always have the goal of, we're going to get the trophy of one of the most legendary tag teams in the last 25 years of professional wrestling history. So it all gives them a mission, something to go for, instead of just being out there in matches.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well said. Well said. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what everybody's take on this is. And we've got a lot of callers in the queue. So we will pause for a second here, set the table for the show, and then start taking your calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the March 9th, 2022 edition of AEW Dynamite. I'm PW Torch's assistant editor, Zach Haydorf, filling in for Wade. Go VIP to check out Wade's Wade Keller Hotline later tonight, and you can and he'll be running down the whole show top to bottom with his analysis on Jeff and on Scorpio Sky as the new champion, Paige Van Zandt. We had the Chris Jericho thing, lots of stuff. But he'll be over there a little bit later tonight running things down. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. If you're interested in checking that out, PWTorch.com/GoVIP. You get that show, you get a lot of other things too. Archives of newsletters for over 30 years, ad-free version of the website, and a multitude of other really, really tremendous podcasts covering a vast array of topics. So give us a shot, pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear with me tonight is that of Bruce Hazelwood from pwtorch.com. Bruce, always a blast talking wrestling with you, man. Welcome to the show.
It is a blast with talking with you, and according to Skype, we haven't done one of these since the end of May, so it's been quite a while for the two of us, at least, to do a show together.
I would not have guessed it was that long ago.
I could have sworn we did a show since I moved to Hawaii, but I guess not, so...
I guess not. Oh, yes. I forget that you're in beautiful Hawaii, man. I mean, it's a stark contrast to the freezing cold temperatures here in Chicago.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's been, you know, basically averaging 85 the last couple of months every day. So I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. You put any more of that out there, you're getting muted, my friend. So
I think the heel turns full effect anyway. So
yeah, yes, yes. Oh gosh. All right. Well, let's open up the phone lines here. Well, we got a lot of callers in the queue, and we're gonna do our best to try to get to as many people as we can. We should have an on-site correspondent, but do me a favor, since we have a lot of callers to get to, keep your points, one or two points, and then we'll make sure to try to make our way through the line here. But 347-215-8558 is the number, 347-215-8558. Press 1 if you want to get on. If you don't want to give us a call tonight, but you want to participate in the show, we got the email bag open as well, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. So with that said, let's go to the phone here. We will start things off with 705. 705, you're up first. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, guys. Hitting from London, Ontario. Just going to get my point out quickly. Hey. I just wanted to get my point quickly, then make way for other callers. I wanted to talk specifically about the pinnacle in general. We saw one breakup, right? We saw Wardlow turn on MJF at the pay-per-view, which I thought was executed fine. But then we saw a very weird breakup between FTR and Tully Blanchard, which sort of just struck me out of nowhere. And I'm like, okay, is this really? Mm-hmm. Are they really going to do a week of breakups this week? And it sort of makes me think, like, is the pinnacle really like the worst, the most underwhelming main event level faction in national professional wrestling? Because we hardly saw all of them together. There aren't really many classic pinnacle moments. There's classic like individual MJF moments, and FTR have had, you know, some moment in the limelight, but we've never had something like collectively as a faction after the feud with Jericho that really sort of, you know, sells who Pinnacle is, what their constitution is, et cetera. What do you guys think of the state of Pinnacle, given what we've seen so far?
Well, I mean, I think it's really an irrelevant group at this point in time. And really, you know, I always kind of felt this way. It seemed to me like they created that just to serve a purpose to book that Blood and Guts match with, you know, with Jericho and MJF kind of at the forefront. Like, they needed somewhere to go with that. And it seems like it was a really good idea at the time. You know, it was kind of a, you know, backwards in execution. If you break that angle down and kind of get to the root of it, it kind of didn't make sense fully, but they had to get to that match. And so I kind of think that group always existed to serve that purpose. And even after that, like, they were around each other, but it really was just kind of in the background. Like, they kind of came together when it made sense. And then there's other weeks where, hey, it wasn't even referenced at all. So I mean, to me, it's like, they're kind of over now, you know? I mean, I don't see MJF, like, coming back and, like, trying to pull that group back together. Like, I think tonight was pretty much definitively, you know, the end of it, with Wardlow saying he's leaving and FDR kind of pushing Tully out the door. Like, I think it's just, you know, that's it for the Pinnacle, kind of served its purpose. But, yeah, if you look at the broad impact that group had, it's very much like a one-hit wonder in a lot of ways, because they were there, one purpose, they got an angle, did some business, and that was really it. So, I mean, MJF is just not a stable guy. I mean, it made sense for that angle, but he's an independent, you know, he's a singles act in every sense of the word. I mean, that's the character, that's the gimmick. You know, FTR and Tully Blanchard aren't going to, like, be, you know, servants to him in a group like that. That doesn't make sense for them. So it was kind of a hodgepodge group to begin with, and I think now we're definitively past that. But Bruce, do you have a different take on the Pinnacle, or do you look back on them fondly?
No, I don't really have too much different to add. I will just say that the last time you and I did a show, it was on the canvas reviewing the Blood and Guts match between Pinnacle and
Circle. Yeah.
So, you know, you could go back and get our thoughts of then, but that was all it was for, as you said. And now the breakup angle between FTR and Tully Blanchard also just seemed to happen out of nowhere. And I just didn't see a reason why Tully Blanchard would interrupt right there. In the end, he got around to it. But when you have, going back to the main kind of overarching complaint that you stated, that Wade has stated, that Jason Powell has stated, that Todd Martin has stated, there's someone that needs to do quality control, because you have this angle happening after the huge breakup and double turn angle in the first segment. So you got to have a better, not just better pacing to it, but you have to look at it as a whole, not just segment to segment, so that you're not repeating the same things over and over again. I think last week there were two low blows in a row, in consecutive segments or something like that. So these are the little things here where it's okay to hold, but that promo didn't need to happen on tonight's episode. That could have been held off until next week, easily. So I just think some of the micro things here and there need to be shored up. And in the macro, Pinnacle just, if you didn't know about Blood and Guts before and you jumped into AEW after, you would think that it was just MJF and Wardlow and then FTR and Tully Blanchard as their own little groups. So they never really did a cohesive job of making them seem like they actually cared about each other and were invested in each other's success.
Yeah, and obviously you're not going to look back on that group as, like, this big, in fact, like, impactful faction in, like, the history of wrestling. Like, this isn't, you know, the Shield 2.0 or anything like that. But I think that, like, you can explain it from a storyline perspective too a little bit, and it's just MJF needed people at that time, and he went out and got them. Now, I think they could have done a better job of weaving that through from last May until today, certainly. But I think there's a small story there to tell, and I'm with you, Bruce, on the quality control thing here. Like, there's a lot of this. I mean, tonight you had the thing with Jericho, you had this angle, you had, like, the beatdown and everything of, you know, Sammy at the end, a lot of similarity to all of those angles. And yeah, you just want to have things stand out. And and as far as FTR goes, hitting to your point, like, that, it came out of nowhere. It really did. Even FTR's rebuttal about, hey, this is about our family. Like, it's like, we haven't heard anything from that team in weeks. So it's like, you know, give it one more week. Have them cut some kind of backstage thing where they're talking about that and then go to the angle next week. You know, they had some room to breathe with that one, and they just, you know, for whatever reason, didn't. But I think the result was, yeah, something that felt rushed and forced, but also faded into the background of everything else that happened on the show. Bruce, anything else on that?
Nope.
Hitting back to you, my friend. Any comments or you know, thoughts on our remarks?
Yeah, I highly doubt, like, next week, if maybe 60% of 50% of their audience remembers this FDR to Tully Blanchard breakup. So just a final point,
yeah,
before I leave. Really happy that we have our first black champion in AEW with Scorpio Sky winning the title. This also, it might seem like it came out of nowhere. If you don't watch Rampage religiously, which, no, I do because I covered for the Torch, but, and I've paid attention to the Scorpio Sky promo. He cut basically the same promo for like weeks and weeks. I haven't been pinned, right? And then there was a period of like 2 or 3 weeks where he didn't say anything. But, you know, these would be like 30-second promos in like very densely packed Rampage shows, which, you know, it's like half the audience that Dynamite does. And now you see, you know, Scorpio Sky is winning. It's like, okay, well, you know, it's a good thing. We have our first, you know, black champion, and that's always good. I'm not saying that, you know, I would have done things differently, but it just felt like there was, you know, throughout the show, such an ensemble type show, no real build toward this main event. And, you know, all of a sudden now Tay Conti's coming out when the television audience, if they're not on social media, they had no idea. But this guy just, you know, proposed to his girlfriend earlier, like, what, a few months ago? Now, of course, that's their personal life. But it just felt like there was a couple of chapters missing from Scorpio Sky's win. And I just hope he's not a transitional champion. That's my final point, guys. Hope you guys have a good show today.
Really appreciate it, Hitten. Thanks for the call. Always good to talk AEW with you. And everybody, check out Hitten's AEW Rampage Hits and Misses, usually up sometime on Saturday after Rampage Friday night. It's really just a really well-written column every week on the show, running down not only what happened, but a full analysis on all the happenings. So you can check that out every week on Saturday, pwtorch.com. Yeah, Bruce, Scorpio Sky, new TNT champion, defeats Sammy Guevara after, you know, like a pretty significant angle, I'd say, with that 680 or whatever it was through the table. I mean, that bump looked just brutal. Just a brutal bump. The table just shatters and he just lands hard on the outside mat. Just brutal bump, and coming out of the bump he took on Sunday, it's like, man, you know, these aren't world title matches there, Sammy Guevara. I mean, they're TNT championship matches. That's important. But, man, he's got to be careful. But with that said, Scorpio Sky, new champ, I think that, in my opinion, like this went in a logical direction. I think that Hit makes a good point that there were some chapters missing. But I kind of like the fact in this instance, and in this instance only, that there were. Because I think you've seen a formula for Tony Khan's booking for quite some time now in the existence of AEW, where he uses dark to give talent and different acts a big chunk of wins so that he can then bring them over to Dynamite and that they can then have a championship match or a number one contender match or what have you. But a lot of times throughout the history of that philosophy, like, that person who's been getting the dark wins comes onto Dynamite and then loses, does the job, and then fades away, like, into kind of just into obscurity. Like, we've seen that with a lot of different people in a lot of different championship situations. So I like the fact that today they, you know, they kind of doubled down on that story with Scorpio Sky, that he's getting these wins. It's happening on Rampage. It's happening on Dark. It's happening in these different places. And then they went with that. They kept that streak going. And I think that does two things. One, I mean, it makes Scorpio Sky the champion. There's a story, a new story now. Wardlow's going to be involved in that next week. But it also, I think it will just there'll be a little piece of people's brains when they're watching other runs like that. Like, okay, hey, it's not a foregone conclusion that this act, whoever it is coming over to the main show to Dynamite, and then he's going to just do a job right away, because it didn't happen with Scorpio Sky. So I think there's like a little bit of doubt there now in the audience's minds because of this win tonight. So I liked it for that reason. What did you think?
Before I forget, I'm going to correct Hutton a little bit here. Scorpio Sky, I think, is the first black male singles champion. In terms of champions overall, he's a former tag team champion as well, but also Nyla Rose is a former women's champion, and she identifies as black too. So I just want to make sure that's clarified. Now, in terms of the match tonight, the angle, I'm just glad that when the table splintered, nothing pointed upward and pierced him, because that's always a possibility, especially when it's not a pre-broken table that's made to just split down the middle, which I understand, you know, effects-wise, it doesn't look as good, but it's also less dangerous. So Guevara has a habit of doing these sorts of, I'm hurting my match, I might need to get taken out of it, angles, and then comes back. My issue, though, is generally when these sorts of angles happen in professional wrestling, they tend to happen more in multi-person matches or in those kind of matches, and not in singles matches. And right before break, I think it was Ethan Page who said, there's no timeouts in this. He yelled it out. So for me, when the whole point of the match is to incapacitate your opponent enough to where they can't answer a three count, or you tap them out where they faint, basically go unconscious in your submission, why is there a timeout called there by the ref? But I understand you're trying to check on him, yada, yada, yada. I also thought it was kind of cute how Guevara entered the ring right as they returned from commercial break. Just perfect timing there to make sure that the match could go on and nothing was actually happening during picture-in-picture. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think it's a good point. Well said. Yeah. Keep going.
To what he said about Tay Conti coming out, when they came back from break, Excalibur did note, I think it was Excalibur, note that that's his girlfriend, but as he was saying, that hasn't been acknowledged, I think, on television yet. So here, there, in terms of the what happened during the match, there's a lot of little things that skip steps, but in terms of what you were saying, I agree, because how many weeks now have we seen Dan Lambert and Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page talking about how long Scorpio Sky's been undefeated? Week in, week out, we hear promos, and they're emphatic, they're confident, they're relatable. So to me, what was missing tonight is what WWE has done well with their main events, is they hype it every hour with some kind of promo or a little vignette or just a graphic letting you know, reminders throughout the night about the world title match. I think with the pace of tonight's match, I couldn't catch everything Excalibur was hyping, and he was hyping so many things tonight that I think, they're, you know, take out that FTR promo and put in a little vignette about the main event. I think that would have done much better here than having that promo there just going to this match kind of cold coming off of Sunday.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And I think too, like, yeah, they do need to do a better job of that. And like the Scorpio Sky thing, you know, he's got enough of a story with this streak now, and they were like even billing it as like streak versus title. You know, talk about that, even if it is just another 30-second thing from him, like do that. And if and on the flip side for Sammy, like if you're gonna have this, if you know you're gonna do the angle in the match where he's hurt and Ty Conti runs out, like have them cut a promo backstage together or something like that. Because I'm with hitting on this. Like there's no storyline reason for her to be out there at all. You know, nothing, zero, unless you are following them on social media. And I think that's where I think people kind of furrow their brows a little bit and go, okay, wait a minute here. Like why is she out there? Like this is strange. Obviously when you look at it at the end, okay, they're building to, you know, Paige VanZant versus Ty Conti, and then more between Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Sammy Guevara. I'm sure there's a mixed tag in there somewhere. Like that's clear. But why it all was there, I think, is messy and continues to be, you know, in different spots on AEW's cards week to week. And this is another one of those quality control things, Bruce, that I think you're talking about. Like just make that make a little more sense.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to add to this is kind of the whole transitional champion aspect that he brought up as well. I can see why that is a thought because of who he's facing next week, but I also think it's clearly set up for MJF to cost Wardlow the match and have Scorpio Sky continue his winning streak and his title reign. The only issues I have is he still nearly lost, even though Guevara's coming off of Sunday's match, and he has the angle with the 630 through the table outside tonight. He still almost lost, and at a certain point, I go, if they really do this to him, like, there's no coming back from this if he loses this match, too, with all the caveats listed on top of Guevara. So it's just, for one, I was a big believer in Scorpio Sky that this should have happened. If it wasn't TNT Championship at the time, you know, a good 18 months ago, he needed to be more featured on the program. So I'm happy for him. I do think that he can have a run in him where that TNT title match becomes one of your must-see matches every time it's out there in a defense. Because he's had, with Dan Lambert and Ethan Page, he's found that character that finally really matches what, how do I put this? It just seems like the confidence and the aggression he's found with this pairing with those two has made him more believable as a top-tier act. And I'm looking forward to him. We all made the jokes when the TNT title was announced that this is where they're going to slot Scorpio Sky, of course. It took them a bit longer to get there, but I see a great reign coming out for him. And I hope they don't go with Wardlow next week and have him really be a transitional champion, because he just can't afford to keep losing big matches like this. He needs to have a solid 6 to 12 months reign where he's defending maybe every other week, and or bring back the open challenge, which would work. Just especially because he has the whole who's gonna break this streak, and just use that as an open challenge to defend the title and go from there.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's exactly how it's gonna play out, my friend. I think he's a fantasy book. Like,
hey,
I almost.
Hey, I won my GM on WWE 2K22, my first go around at program. So I think I know. Maybe I can book a little bit, just a little bit.
There you go. I mean, but yeah, no, I mean, and it makes sense on multiple levels. I mean, I think if MJF doesn't cost Wardlow that match, like, it's like, I mean, that's your opportunity to get a lot of heat back on him. And I think, you know, they want to go to that program clearly, and I don't know that program needs the TNT championship. So yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, it's in line to make that happen. And I think, like, you know, Scorpio Sky as a heel will play the other dance partner in that whole scenario really effectively. I think he will come across good in that regard from a heel perspective. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. 410, you are up next. 410, state your name, where you're calling from. I think this is Reverend Keith. Keith, is that you?
Yes, it is. And good evening, gentlemen. Save some of the analysis and discussion for us callers. You guys are really having a blast over there. You sound great.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm going to be brief and to the point. I just want to recognize the opening segment. I thought it was well worked, well laid out and devised. I'm going to share my thoughts on it. The Jericho Appreciation Society. So now that we have Jericho, Hager 2.0, and Daniel Garcia, what do you think that they're ultimately going to do with Mox and Bryan Danielson? Because originally it seemed like this storyline was more geared towards them. But now that they're with the magnanimous, the phenomenal William Regal, where do you think each of these two storylines are headed? Please give me your thoughts on it. Have fun tonight, guys. You're doing a wonderful job, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Keith. Always good to talk wrestling with you, man. Appreciate the call. Bruce, let's take that from a couple different spots. I mean, first, before we get into Keith's question specifically, and we'll definitely get there, Keith, but, you know, just the turn in general. I mean, how did you think it was executed? Did you buy it? Did you see it coming? You know, just talk openly about kind of the turn itself.
Sure. So I think the turn was done well. As Tyler Sage wrote in his report, the double turn was a bit cute, but I still think it worked because Hager did really come out looking a bit shocked at what happened. Now, to me, the what made me a bit sad watching this was I was so geared up and ready to watch Mox and Danielson just have this stable of dudes that are great technical wrestlers, just showing them how to stretch people and just be snug and stiff and all that. And now we might not get that. And I still think there was a way to do it with Regal, where he could basically recreate Black and Gold with a little stable in AEW with these great technical wrestlers who just hit really hard. I'm not thrilled about the group that was formed here because Daniel Garcia is the only person that really interests me out of those five. And I'm not sure he's getting a nice rub here from being with Jericho, but I just am not sure if this is the best thing for his career right now. On the other hand, the angle was done well. That bat, when it hit Ortiz's head, it just made a thung noise that you could hear.
Oh, yeah.
And Ortiz sold like he was dead. He was just out. And, very, very, very nice job. To me, I wanted this breakup to happen a long time ago. But this finally frees up Santana and Ortiz to not just finally, run the tag team division as they could. But I've been looking forward to ever since his sit-down promo with Jim Ross before his world title match with Jon Moxley last year, I think right around this time. I've really been looking forward to that singles run for Santana. So I hope that out of this, they can both have a tag team run, but also have Santana dabble with some singles matches to see just how much he has in the potential there, because I thought he acquitted himself well against Mox last year.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the angle too. I thought it was well done. I think, they kind of threw the audience off course, with the initial kind of handshake. Like, that was well sold by Eddie and by Chris Jericho to kind of like get to that, to the next level where the turn happened. I mean, you seen it a mile away if it happens just right then, but I think waiting a little bit during the segment and then going to the full turn was impactful. I'll take a different side of the coin on Daniel Garcia. Like, I think if this is, it depends on the perspective that you have as far as where sure. you'd like him to be. Because
sure.
When you look at him, it's like, okay, he's a good technical wrestler for sure. And he's had some really good matches. But, at the same time, he's also just running around with 2.0, And now it's like, okay, now he's still part of a group, but it's Chris Jericho, And I think that should lend itself to hopefully a little more impact for him and maybe even some character growth, because I think he needs that too if he's going to take keep climbing up the card. Reverend Keith, to answer your question, I see both of these kind of new groups colliding head on, to be completely honest, and maybe Mox and Danielson can pull Daniel Garcia out of that Jericho group. Like, it just seems to me that like Eddie Kingston is involved there now. Like, there's a Moxley connection there. It just seems like there's a lot of natural fits. So my thought is, if we're talking again and we're doing another May show, Bruce, like, it would not surprise me in the least if we're talking about that faction against, the new Regal Danielson Moxley faction. I think that's more than just a kind of a wishful possibility at this point. I think that when you ask Reverend Keith, where do each of those groups go? To me, they collide head on, and that makes a lot of sense. Bruce, what's your take on that part of Keith's question?
If they do Blood and Guts again around the same time, the only other kind of faction war that could work there would be whatever happens between the Undisputed Originals, as they're calling them, and if Omega's healthy enough with the Elite. But aside from that, they're setting the stage now for this to happen. And Kingston not only has a history, you said, with Moxley, but as he stated tonight, he had that feud with Danielson, which is based around the things that Regal brought up tonight that held him back. And we can get to Regal's kind of promo and all the reaction on Twitter about what he said to Danielson, what he said about Moxley. But I think, as you said, all the pieces are in place to pull, and eventually, I guess at this point, if you're going to make it 5-on-5, and Santana Ortiz to the Moxley Danielson Regal-led group and have a 5-on-5 just brutal, brutal match for Blood and Guts. Now, the only issue, the only reason I don't think it would happen at Blood and Guts is because you'd have to heat up 2.0 and Daniel Garcia a lot in the next about 8 weeks before, I think Blood and Guts happened in the middle of May last year. So it's just, there are steps they still need to take to make sure that when this match, if this match is scheduled for Blood and Guts, if they do have it, that the hype is there and people are excited for it and not just like, why? And so I think in that aspect, they're laying the seeds now and they're doing a good job. And Kingston is just a master on the mic and his reactions are great. Even when he was being held there waiting for the bat to hit him in the face, he just had that indignant look on his face like, oh, you bastard, you can try. It doesn't matter. I'm still going to get you. So I think especially adding his charisma and his ferocity to what is already a ferocious group in Moxley and Danielson, that'll just be that'll be one of the most formidable stables as soon as it's formed.
Yeah, and even if Kingston doesn't officially join the group, at the very least, I think you're headed for, just them connecting on this for sure. Also, props to Eddie Kingston, probably the best shutdown of the what chant in history. That was a beautiful thing. All right, we'll keep it going here with callers. 773, you are up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, my name is Evan. I'm from Chicago.
Hey, Evan, good to hear from you, man. Another Chicagoan. Always good to talk to one. What'd you think of Dynamite, man?
Man, honestly, I've been listening to the show, and one thing I got to say is I'm seeing a lot of colors being thrown and shown here tonight, but to cap it all off with a new TNT champion, especially if, you've been a fan of Scorpio's and you've been watching over the past year, you know by now he's someone who you can easily get behind as the champion. But one thing I can't stand right now is already the Scorpio slander. The fact that people are already thinking that he's going to be a transitional champion, the fact that he's going to win his match next week, honestly, because we're still thinking about the fact that there's unfinished business between Wardlow and MJF is honestly baffling to me. So this transitional champion talk needs to be, scaled back about five notches before we figure out that somebody's feelings are going to be hurt next week when he still comes up victorious. Now, keeping it real, I don't even think tonight's match was about Scorpio Sky versus Sammy Guevara. It was about hyping up Paige VanZant versus Ty Conti.
Yep.
And that's going to be another match in itself because we're ultimately going to get a rematch between Scorpio Sky and Sammy Guevara down the line. Championship or not, that's unfinished business as well. But my thing from here right now is, do you think that we're going to allow ourselves to be taught that MJF is going to play a factor in this championship match next week?
I think it's almost a certainty that he will. And so for that reason, I don't see Scorpio Sky as a transitional champion right now. I think he's going to, have that belt for a while. I think there's a battle of the belts coming up at some point. So maybe they may build to that, like Scorpio versus Sammy, and do that rematch there. But no, I mean, the story writes itself to go down the path of MJF costing Wardlow that championship. I mean, that's how you heat up that feud. That's how you, keep the belt on Scorpio Sky. You can, keep his heat that way too, as a heel. So nothing's ever certain, but if there was a certainty, I mean, to me, Bruce, this is a layup. MJF's getting involved.
It's a dunk. You and I earlier said that we would not make it a transitional champion. We would make him have a long reign where he's defending and just does well. And it, as you said, not just the MJF involvement rights itself, but his promos throughout the last several months about being undefeated also helped sell the story. So like I said earlier, he cannot afford to lose another big match. He needs to have a long run. And I've long been a Scorpio Sky fan. I thought he should have happened a lot earlier, but I'm happy to see where this goes. If they make Wardlow the champ next week, then It'll be promotional malpractice to a certain extent because they have someone there who black and brown audiences especially want to see pushed to a higher level. He is finally starting to receive that push. And to just take the rug out from under their feet right then and there, right where he gets to the, right when he's starting that push, that's not going to bode well for Tony Khan, for AEW moving forward, especially coming off of everything with Big Swole and everything else since then. They need to make sure that, and I know people are going to be, oh my gosh, it's so political. Shut up, people. They need to make sure he has a good run as champion.
Yeah. I mean, and even if, I mean, it's well said, and I absolutely agree 100%. But even if you take that out of it, like from storyline perspective, you need that to happen to Wardlow. Like that has to happen. MJF needs that moment. They need to continue that story too. And so I think it's smart booking on a lot of levels, because again, you keep the belt on Scorpio Sky, you position him as a winning champion. His streak is intact. He can go on and have other title defenses, and you know, you build that Wardlow MJF program. So, yeah, Evan, I think that's where they're going, and I think it's the right call. And I'll be very surprised if next week I'm eating my words on this, but I just don't think I'm going to. Evan, back to you.
Yeah, and I forgive me for bouncing in on other people's calls, but I like to get everybody involved. I heard what the man said about, you know, having Daniel Garcia. I'm a huge fan of Daniel Garcia. When I saw him first arrive on AEW, I was surprised, but I knew he was going to be a big player coming in and instead of just laying low, collecting dust and you know, wherever he could. I'm going to need him to say it and not spread when it comes to him saying that Chris Jericho may not be a good fit for him right now. I think he's in a great place for Chris Jericho to take him under his wing and actually work with him. But if you think that the way Daniel Garcia is right now with his guys and being Lee and Parker, if I got their names right, 2.0, do you think they would still have their own agenda working with Chris Jericho, or is this, you know, just going to be some sort of one-off that's just happening just because? Especially when you do think about something like Blood and Guts coming up, I don't really see this as a long-term alliance, because you've never really seen the people that Daniel Garcia and 2.0 have got themselves involved with stay together. Because I didn't even think that they were going to stay together, but they did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the name of the group says it all. Like,
The Jericho Appreciation Society.
So, I mean, to me, that means, like, Jericho as a heel now has himself surrounded by people who are just going to, you know, do his bidding, right? I mean, it's not like the next crop of stars in Sammy Guevara or a tremendous tag team in Santana or Ortiz. These are people that are there to serve Chris Jericho. Like, I think that's what they're going for. I think Daniel Garcia, like long-term, not short-term, but long-term, is going to be the guy, kind of the odd person out on that. That's why I can see him kind of being lured away by Danielson and Moxley at some point. So I don't know that it's like super long-term, like Inner Circle long, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, only 1 month either. So there's going to be probably some range to that. Bruce, I'll let you defend your opinion there on Jericho and Garcia.
Yeah. So I was the one who said that I don't think it's good for Garcia to be with Jericho, just because I think it would be better for him to be with Mox and Danielson and Regal, because I think his style, his persona, it just matches them better than it does Jericho and his group. Now, I'll eat my words if they make this work out, but I do also think that when it comes to your question about 2.0 and whatnot, never put anything past those pesky Canadians, you know, them and Jericho, they have that nationality behind them. So they could definitely be plotting something to where, and again, that could be how they get Garcia to be in the group with Danielson and Moxley and potentially Eddie Kingston. So I think you do bring up some very valid points and criticisms of what I said. And, Jericho does have that cachet, so I'm not trying to necessarily say that it's totally bad. I just think that there was more room had for growth had he formed that what people were hoping for with Moxley and Danielson.
Evan, back to you.
No, I agree. I agree. I think, the, like you said, it may be like a short-term thing, you know, especially if there is interest in someone like Daniel Garcia, you know, and honestly, I like the run that he's been having and you know, the looks that he's been getting. So I can't wait to see where that goes. And, you know, that's where I stand on that. So thank you, guys. Thank you for allowing me the time to talk to you guys.
Oh, great call, Evan. Thanks very much. Call again. Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right, we'll keep it rolling here, Bruce. We will go to Deke in Michigan. Deke, thanks for calling, my friend. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, fellas, what's happening? Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you loud and clear, Deke.
Hey, thanks, man. Sorry, as I've been known to do, I'm walking my dog as I'm talking to you guys. But, you know, no offense to you guys, but I wish Wade was here today because, only because, I think he's done a very good job, especially, just giving him a compliment, especially the last week, because there are not too many people out there, journalist-wise, who are calling AEW out for what's going on in this company. And I think you guys are doing a fairly decent job tonight, too. Yeah, there's a lot of good things going on, but man, this company could be so much better. And I got to give Wade credit last week. I got to give him credit for his pay-per-view post-show. And I got to give him credit for his show with Jason Powell yesterday. They really laid it out there very well. And I thought we saw more of the same tonight. Starting with a lot of the stuff you guys have already mentioned. I want to get to that if I can, if you give me the time. The Ty Conti, Sammy Guevara stuff, which is an absolute joke, but something that hasn't been mentioned yet. How about your world champion? I just, once again, they have booked this guy like a complete nobody. And what does he do? With no pomp, no circumstance, no anything, you just drag him out there in the second match of the night, unannounced. Maybe it was announced on Twitter. I don't know. Apparently, I'm not in the bubble. He comes out and fights Dante Martin. Dante Martin, who they just put back in a tag team last week. This is your world champion. Once again, you book this guy to be a nobody. And he wins in a nothing match against the guy who was the number two contender. I was the number two contender get a world championship match today. And it wasn't the only time that happened tonight, guys. How does that happen? And once again, you just booked this guy to be a regular, to be a nobody. And then he goes in the back, and he's already kind of confusing. He's already hanging around with losers. Well, a lot of people online like those guys for whatever reason. And then he kind of punked them out tonight. So once again, you have given people the reason to not like or care about your world champion. Because he kind of punked out people that a lot of your core audience likes. Am I crazy here? Like, what they have done to Adam Cage, and they continue to do to this guy, is just insane.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought this up, Deke, because this I did not like, you know, the match. Look, the match is what it was. I mean, I think, yeah, you want to treat your AW champion, your world champion, with a little more, you know, with some white gloves. You know, I don't know, you want to be announcing his match at the last second. You know, all of those things absolutely are in play. That is not something that I think will derail Adam Page. However, the backstage thing stuff with Dark Order, Bruce, to me at this point is really, I don't know, unforgivable is the first word that comes into my brain. Because, look,
yeah.
Number one, the Dark Order are – they are, you know, a low-card comedy-type group, period. And sure, yes, they played a part in his long-term story arc, and they brought him out of his funk and whatever. Like, if you look back at the story in its entirety, that makes sense. But if you go back to that time and you go week to week with that story, some of those weeks it felt like Dark Order was really dragging Adam Page down. And so not only here are you tying those two entities together again, and Page and Dark Order involved in a story together, but you now have Page, your babyface champion, running down the group that had his back when he was in his darkest times as a character on his way to the world title. So I think on multiple levels, that backstage segment was just not a smart one for Page to be involved with. This, to me, like, his title reign has to be defined by great competitive matches in the ring. Like, just do more of that. And he's had some of those. I mean, the Bryan Danielson stuff was good. Adam Cole at Revolution was also fine, although I don't think framed properly in the lead-up. But this is a weird pivot and not one that I think is going to be effective for Adam Page long-term if he's going to stay as a babyface champion. Bruce, your thoughts?
So I'm going to play devil's advocate slightly here, but overall I tend to agree with what you two are saying. I've been critical of his booking, and I have said that one of the reasons it's been kind of on the downside is he hasn't been featured on Dynamite very much, whereas the previous champions were kind of in their week in and week out. So at least they put him on TV here. And I'm also someone who, if there's no other automatic visible, I guess, feud for the world champion, I don't mind them having tune-up matches in between to kind of just, for one, kayfabe-wise, not go rusty, but two, just to remind people that they're there. I will also commend him for when he slipped catching Martin, he did a fine job rolling through again to make the spot happen, so I'll say that was fine. And while the ending sequence was a bit choreographed, I do like how it played out in the end with the buckshot. So I will say those are good things. Now, I want to hear from Tony Khan the legitimate reasons why Dark Order still exists as a faction as it is, because I don't think that's ever really been explained since the death of Brody Lee. And I know that part of it was they want to keep them, they kept them around as tribute, but they haven't really done anything of consequence besides being Adam Page's buddies. And that's fine. They were there when he won the title. They were there celebrating. I just don't know, as you said, if this backstage segment needed to happen in general. You don't – it's just – yeah. How do I put this? I think that if they had stuck with the match and how it ended, that would have been fine for tonight. But what they did in the backstage segment kind of erased the match from most people's minds, in my opinion, and let them just linger on what happened between him and the Dark Order, which is not what you want to happen with your world champion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of mixed messages with that Dark Order thing. Number one, hey, he's hanging out with them again. Number two, he's kind of, you know, being very dismissive of them and going with a different partners. I, again, you just don't know how to feel about that interaction. And I think, you know, Adam Page is at a moment where, like, he needs, like, consistent, strong booking where he's the alpha, he's confident, he knows what he's doing, he knows the character, and he's carrying himself in a way that's, you know, a big-time star. And I think too often in these backstage segments, you kind of see that him hedging, like, oh, I don't know, yeah, I kind of went with these other guys and, like, this and that. And, like, it's so in the middle. And I think you want people to feel a definitive way about him, and I really don't think that segment was effective in that regard. Deke, back to you for any comments on our comments or a different topic altogether before we hop to some other calls.
Yeah, thanks, man. Let me comment on something you said, and then I'll jump to something else. You said it when I just want to see Paige have great matches. Well, that seems like that's the answer to everything in AEW. Oh, just have a great match. And I think that's part of the reason why they put him in there with Dante today. But you know what? What's been their one, I don't want to say only, but their one major, major feud that struck a chord with everybody in the last year. Punk and MJF. And was it because they had a great match? No, it's because they told a story, they build characters. And this company, even though that's the most over thing they have, they still don't seem to get it. They just five-star matches because Dave or whoever says they're going to be five-star matches. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not the answer. Getting people invested is the answer. And even though they do it once, Punk, MJF, they did it with Eddie and Jericho and Eddie and Punk, both of which were two-week feuds, by the way. They just don't seem to get it. They just think that, oh, we'll just throw matches out there. Nah, man, that's not the way to do it. Anyway, moving on to the TNT title, I got to completely disagree with you guys and the callers here. We're worried about Scorpio being a transitional champion. What TNT champion hasn't been a transitional champion? Sorry, that car is going by. What TNT champion hasn't been? Like, Miro held the belt for, what, 2 months? And I think he's the longest champion. I mean, this title has been nothing but tossed around. Sammy has had it twice now in, like, 4 weeks. Like, since Cody left. All they do is turn this thing over and over and over. And the stipulations for this title, I talked about it last week on the show, to get in the TNT ladder match at the pay-per-view, these guys had to qualify. Then they had to win the ladder match to get a title shot. Well, then how the heck did Scorpio Sky get a title shot tonight?
Scorpio Sky got the title shot because he was. I mean, I don't want to disagree with you too much because he is an outlier, and there's not a consistent way to get TNT challengers. So to that end, I absolutely agree. Scorpio Sky himself individually, that I think made sense. You know, he was undefeated for 365 days.
Well,
you know,
I like Scorpio Sky. Don't get me wrong, I like the guy, but why? Why do we put these things in here when we got Warhorse and Eddie Kingston and every other guy from the Indies just coming in, answering calls, and then all of a sudden, 3 days ago, we had to have some massive, you had to qualify over here. Now this guy wins. I mean, this title has literally flipped over and over and over and over again. So, I mean, this did nothing for me other than make Sammy look bad because he lost again. And then the thing with Ty, and it goes right into everything Wade has said. I've called in and talked about it. You guys have talked about it tonight. Ty Conti just runs down. No one on earth knows they're together unless you're in the bubble. And again, there's been a huge thing all week about the bubble and about who knows what and who's a real fan and all this stuff. Because some guy said, someone please explain to me CM Punk's entrance at the pay-per-view. Well, then everybody who thinks they're smart starts murdering this guy, including CM Punk, or you need a brain. You don't know what you're doing. Well, guess what, man? ROH wasn't available everywhere in 2003, 2004. Man, we all don't watch all this stuff. I don't follow Ty Conti on Instagram to see that they were in Brazil a month ago. And they just dragged him out there. The last time I saw Sammy with a girl, he proposed to some other girl like 6 months ago. What? That wasn't her.
Yeah, man.
That was some other girl. And they did it with Britt, too. And I called this show, and I said, you've ruined Britt Baker. And guess what? She hasn't gotten up since either. She's been awful. since they just put her out there with Adam Cole with no explanation. I mean, these people, they don't explain anything. They all think that we were watching ROH in 2002. We weren't.
Yeah.
And we don't all follow Ty Conti on Instagram. I mean, I'm sorry, guys. I know these people have talent, but you're putting them in a bad position. You know what I mean? You're putting them in a bad position. They are better than the position they're being put in.
Look, I think you're right. I mean, they have to be better about some of their continuity stuff. There's no doubt. I mean, if you're gonna put, look, nothing wrong with putting Ty Conti and Sammy Guevara together. It's just you have to start that on Dynamite. You can't assume that people know that they just know that. Same thing with Britt Baker. You know, you got it. You can't make those assumptions, Bruce. I'm with Deke on this. And I think it goes deeper than just like those two spots. Like, I think you can apply it to a lot of the Bullet Club stuff that happens in AEW, that you assume people know the connection that Jay White has with Bullet Club when he comes in, or even who the heck he is, you know? And I think not only would it mean more that those guys are in the company, even if it's for a short stay, if you do give that appearance some context, it'll make your show more buttoned up, and people won't be watching it going, I have no idea who these people are. Like, you know, tell me who they are. The Punk entrance, I think, plays totally differently. I don't know that the same the rule applies, because that whole feud, you know, you did see on television. That was just more of like a little kind of Easter egg nugget. So I'm more leaning on that. But some of these other things that Deke brings up, Bruce, I mean, I think it's a fair point for sure.
Yeah, I honestly don't have anything else to add. I think you two have gone over it very well.
Yeah, yeah. Deke, thanks. Appreciate it, man. I'm going to try to jump to some other calls here, but great, great topics as usual, and make sure to call again.
Hey, guys, go VIP. Been a member for 11 years. Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon, all right?
Yep. Thanks, Deke. All right, we'll go next to Sergio in Connecticut. Sergio, you're up. Thanks for holding. What did you think of Dynamite tonight, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I was a fan of Dynamite. There was a lot that happened in the show. Like, it was a pretty jam-packed show. I mean, not everything hit with me, but there was a lot of stuff for, you know, whatever you were looking for. But you guys did hit on my big topics. My big topics that I wanted to talk about was Wardlow, number one, and number two, the TNT title change. First, I would just like to talk about Wardlow a little more in depth. I know we talked about it, but we haven't exactly stopped and talked about his promo that he did today. He came to the center of the ring. He looked down the barrel of the camera. He gave a mission statement. He said he's done with MJF. Obviously, that's going to come back next week and bite him in the butt, because I'm sure MJF is going to cost him that title shot next week, as we discussed here already, which I'm cool with as long as it's Scorpio Sky and not Sammy Guevara, because I was in Bridgeport 2 weeks ago, and Sammy Guevara has been ice cold for like a couple months now. He got like no reaction in Bridgeport, and I'm just glad the title's off of him, to be honest with you. And giving somebody else like Scorpio Sky a title, that's fine. But I just want to know your guys' opinion on Wardlow's promo today, because I thought it was strong. I'm definitely in the camp of I think Wardlow's a future world champion. I think he's great. I thought when the Pinnacle first formed, that first segment that they had, that's the first time he really caught my eye. Besides, he was like a background character. I remember he was super intense. He was like flexing in the camera, throwing people around. And I was like, man, this guy has something. And I feel like ever since then, obviously the Pinnacle fizzled out. But I'm talking about Wardlow in general. What do you guys think of his promo? And what do you guys think of his future going forward? Because I really do think he has a big future in AEW.
A really, really bright future, I think, for sure. I mean, I think you saw... You saw pieces of his personality really come out during this, you know, partnership with MJF. You know, the facial expressions, the little nuances, the background stuff that he did. To me, it wasn't significant at the time, but it was like a little string to follow all throughout, you know, his time with MJF. But it also, it kind of, in a meta way, just kind of showed you that he knows – he knows the business a bit, knows what, you know, he's supposed to do, knows what connects with an audience and what people might notice. And so that tells me that he's got a good feel for what's happening out there. And I thought tonight's promo, Bruce, was very well done. You know, I thought that he carried himself in a confident way, but not in an arrogant heel way. Like what he was saying, you could get behind as a babyface. The mission statement that Sergio talked about was there and it was clear. Like, hey, I'm not just here for the TNT title. I'm here to take over everything. But he said that in a way that was like, yeah, I want to get behind this. I want to watch this guy accomplish that. So, and then from an execution standpoint, the cadence was strong. Like he wasn't fumbling over his words. He was to the point. He was concise. It's clear. Like I thought it worked as like his, you know, next chapter in the company. And so that to me was a sign that like, okay, yeah, he's not just a big guy in the ring that's going to do, you know, cool spots, but he can talk, he can carry a promo, and, you know, he's obviously in his infancy as far as that goes with the company, but I think this was a really good first start. Bruce, what'd you think?
Shout out to Rich Fan. As someone who lives in Pittsburgh, he's been on the Wardlow train for a long time. And for me, Wardlow caught my eye, and I knew he could do it, and he had it. In that first match he had in AEW, that steel cage match with Cody, once I saw that match, I said, oh, this guy, definitely, I see all the hype behind it, even though this was his first televised match. So I completely agree. His promo tonight, considering we haven't really heard him speak too much, it was, I would dare say, a really good promo. He started out, one thing that I cover NXT on Tuesday nights as the All Perspective, and one thing I keep criticizing Bron Breakker for is his promos don't have level. They always start at 8 or 9 or 10 and stay there. Wardlow showed levels tonight. He started out calm, mm-hmm. collected, talked about his story, brought up his mother and poverty, and a lot of people can relate to that. Most people can relate to that. So he did a lot of things in his promo where it made you feel for him and understand him. As the last caller was saying, building character. This was a building character moment. We get to understand his motivations. We get to understand who Wardlow is thanks to what he said tonight. And as both of you said, he went at this in a logical and well-intentioned way in terms of how he laid out his promo and how he built to his mission statement of, now this is my AEW. I'm coming for everything. Basically, you know, I'm going to be world champion, essentially. I think this was, in terms of a character reset, someone coming off a big feud or big angle and kind of coming into themselves, this is probably one of the best promos in that sense in AEW's history.
Yeah, it was. And the other thing that I failed to mention before, and you started to touch on this, was I thought Wardlow did a really nice job of believably just and openly and transparently talking to the audience about why he was with MJF to begin with. Like, hey, I knew he was this bad guy. I needed to get some respect. I needed to do these things. And then I got tired of, you know, doing someone else's dirty work. I thought he connected those dots in a believable way. I'm glad that he called attention to it so that it's not just, hey, you know, don't forget that you did all these bad things for this guy. And like, you know, where were you all along? So I thought it was smart for him as a babyface to kind of not just tell the audience like, hey, I'm in this new place, but here's why I was where I was and how I got to where I am now. And now this is what I'm going to do. And I thought he tied that all together really nicely. Bruce, go ahead.
Oh, no, that I think you tied it off well there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sergio, back to you. Anything else on Wardlow or your other topic?
Definitely a little bit more about Wardlow. Like I said, ever since that whole Pinnacle thing, I really connected with him. Like, in Bridgeport a couple weeks ago, I was on-site correspondent, and I brought up that, like, Spears was kind of, like, you know, being his smarmy self, and my section of the crowd was literally begging Wardlow to just powerbomb this guy. And his facial expressions mm-hmm. were like, oh, I want to do it so bad, but I just can't. I just can't. And I loved his promo today. Like, I've been behind Wardlow for a little bit now. And, like, but, like, he brought his human element into it really nicely. Like, I was like, wow. Like, because I'm really close with my beautiful mother. I know that. So, like, for him to be like, listen, I had to do what I had to do, you know, to get my mom out of poverty, to get my family out of poverty, that shows, like, okay, this guy isn't just a beefed up, muscled up guy that can kick ass and be a badass, but he also has a backstory to him. He has a morality. He's doing anything for his family. But he also recognizes, mm-hmm. like, listen, I went to some dark places to do that, but at the end of the day, you know, my mother comes above it all. So it's like it gives him it gives him a reason for it that I think a lot of people can, you know, they can sympathize with. Like, oh, I would do anything for my mother too, you know, kind of thing. So I don't know. I just really see bright things for Wardlow. Love the promo.
Let me jump in real quick, Sergio, because I wanna get to that other your other question, Bruce. I mean, what is the we talked about Jeff Hardy's ceiling, but what's Wardlow's ceiling in your eyes? Like, you know, is it world title?
Oh, he's definitely a world title contender and champion in the future. I don't see how you have that look. You have this mission statement that he just put out tonight, and the kind of the skills he's been showing and the improvement he's shown, and not book him as world champion. We've seen people that are less physically gifted in the ring and have done worse promos as world champions in professional wrestling promotions before. So if he doesn't become world champion in his time in AEW, and I dare say within the next 2 years, then something's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah. And I'd also say too, I mean, I agree. I think he's definitely, you know, on track to be a main event guy, world champion. Maybe not in AEW though. Like, to me, like he's somebody that, like, you know, Vince McMahon would look at that guy and go, okay, wow, I can make money with that guy. You know, I think Wardlow, not only is he going to wear a lot of gold, but I think he's going to get paid a lot of money in this business too. Whether it's from Tony Khan or from Vince McMahon. I just think he's shown enough where it's like somebody's going to have to pony up for that guy for sure. Okay, Sergio, back to you.
Another question I have, I hate to keep, because I did have another question, but I don't know, I'm just really into this Wardlow talk. And one thing, the Wardlow's world did come off very Roman Empire-ish, so I hope they're not going to try to push that too far. Like, hey, Wardlow's world is like his catchphrase. Just let him be, you know, a normal guy that doesn't have to sprout the catchphrase every 10 seconds. But also, with the incoming MJF feud for sure, is there anyone that you can see that will be a new muscle for MJF? Very similar to, like, when HBK lost Diesel, he got Sid Vicious in his corner to watch his back. Like, is there another big guy that you guys could think, like, I'm trying to go through the Rolodex of AEW talent, that big guy in the Dark Order, 10, I forget his real name. Like, maybe MJF could buy him off of the Dark Order for a big enough price. Do you think MJF, because I think MJF as a character just works so much better, like, when he has a big muscle head in front of him that he could kind of squeal behind and kind of throw in front of him in the tracks before he actually gets his hands dirty in a match. I think Wardlow did do that really well, but his star power is undeniable, so eventually you have to break him up. Is MJF going to get another Wardlow type, but maybe not the ceiling that Wardlow has of a big guy that he can hide behind and do his dirty work and help him in this feud with Wardlow, actually?
You know, I think for sure you're going to see Sean Spears get involved, absolutely. You know, and he's not obviously not a big guy, but I think that's going to be some muscle's the wrong word, but somebody that Wardlow can throw around before getting to MJF. I think that's absolutely in play. But Bruce, what do you think? Is there anybody that's catching your mind? To me, there's not at the moment of somebody that can step in and play that Wardlow role. But what do you think?
Maybe this isn't a good sign because you can't think of him, but I'm pretty sure Brian Cage is set up to be the next bodyguard for MJF because he's no longer with what's Taz's group called? Why am I forgetting the group?
Team Taz.
Yeah. Wow. It's so simple you forget sometimes. Yeah. So he's no longer with Team Taz. He apparently re-signed with AEW, even though his wife has been saying all these critical things about him not being on TV. I guess what better way to bring him back than have him associated with the top heel in the company and arguably in the business. So I think if they do, I don't think they have to go this way with MJF having another bodyguard. I think it could be a great opportunity for MJF to finally break out and show people, because he's a good wrestler, and show people that he doesn't need to always rely on these heel tactics to be a good heel and also to win. But if they do go the route of having a Sid to the Diesel, I think Brian Cage is the obvious person to choose.
Great call. Not much to add on that one. What do you think about that, Sergio?
It's so funny, man. Like, I'm not kidding you. When they were announced that Brian Cage had they picked up his option, my cousin, who's also very into AEW, when we were talking about it, I was like, oh, he's probably going to be Wardlow's replacement. I swear to you, I said that when it happened like 2 weeks ago, and it just completely slipped my mind when I was trying to think of a big guy, just because Brian Cage, who I was a huge fan of in Lucha Underground, by the way, just has not been in the forefront of AEW's, you know, TV for however long since he got, you know, thrown out of Team Taz. But I think that'd be a perfect spot, and honestly, a really good feud for Wardlow, too, would be Brian Cage. But I do have one more question, if that's okay, if I could sneak in one more question, if that's all right with you guys.
Go ahead. Yep.
It's definitely Hangman Page. Like, Hangman Page, like, I heard a couple callers ago, you know, trashing how Hangman Page has been portrayed and stuff, and I agree. Hangman Page has had some really high highs in AEW, like when he came out for that 5-on-5 match to earn a championship match, and they actually lost that match. That popped was thunderous. When he came back at the Casino Battle Royal ladder match, popped was thunderous. His matches against Danielson, and he's even had a few really good promos, similar to the Wardlow promo, where he, like, lays out a mission statement, but there's just not follow-up with Hangman Page, and I really feel like the crowd, man, they turned on him completely on Sunday, and I felt there was some people turning on him this week, and he just came off as kind of a douche to the Dark Order this week. And one thing I was thinking, I did email the Fix last week, and I brought up looking for some way to get Don Callis back in AEW's TV. And, I mean, he did show up at Sunday night, which I was happy about. But I just hope if the fans continually keep booing Hangman Page that they don't try to force him down as a babyface. Like, hey, maybe Hangman Page's future is with the Young Bucks turning heel. Do you guys see any of that? Maybe Don Callis is a mouthpiece. I mean, the Young Bucks have been reluctant to even touch Hangman Page since the whole thing with Kenny Omega. Is that something you could see in the future? Like, I just hope if he's getting negative crowd reaction, don't just keep trying to force him as a babyface. And if you have to turn him, turn him, especially coming off the Cody thing. Because I think, honestly, like, him joining up with the Bucks, who've been reluctant to attack him, and maybe even with Don Callis, because Hangman Page, he's good for a promo here and there, but he doesn't have much personality. And he could feed off the personality of somebody like a Don Callis and obviously the Young Bucks. And maybe even that could lead into the future of Kenny Omega versus Hangman Page with the tables turned as Don Callis turns on Kenny Omega and says, Kenny Omega, you're old news. Hangman Page beat you. He's the future. And he's, you know, something along those lines. What do you guys think? Because I really don't want them to swim upstream with Hangman Page trying to keep him babyface if the crowd just turns on him.
Well, yeah, you definitely don't want to do that. I mean, for sure not. But I don't get the sense that they're there yet, Bruce. I mean, I don't think the Adam Page title reign is necessarily going well from a booking perspective. I think he's got some really good championship matches under his belt for sure. But to Deke's point earlier, like the character and the story and just his kind of aura as champion, I think is weaker than it should be. And I think it is because of a lot of the twists and turns that they try to tell with his story. Like, you know, he started out hot and he fizzled, hit rock bottom, built back up, found the Dark Order, you know, got hot again and won the world title. And it's like that story, I think, worked excellently. I think it was a long-term arc. It had hits and misses along the way, no doubt. But, you know, it was clear they were going somewhere. And, you know, you can look back and go, all right, that made sense. But once you became champion, though, I think they've leaned too much back into that old Adam Page of like, I'm not sure if I'm worthy. You know, he goes 60 minutes and he's like, yeah, I don't really feel like a champion anymore because I didn't, you know, pin Bryan Danielson. It's like just the tone has been off. I think when you tell that story with Page and you have him win the title, the Page you need to see now is a new Adam Page, a confident Adam Page. It's Adam Page who knows he's worthy enough to be champion and shows it in the ring, shows it on the mic, shows it with how he carries himself. Not only does that help him from a character perspective, but he adopts the role as champion when he acts that way. And I think that has missed a lot and has cooled him off. But I don't think he's ice cold yet either. I mean, he's still got a big reaction tonight. We'll talk to an on-site correspondent here in a little while to get some – or actually, he just called in, so we'll get to him next here to see. But, Bruce, I don't get the sense that he's this ice-cold act that you have to turn. But at the same time, if he gets there, yes, you wanna pivot with that. But I just don't feel a heel turn on the horizon. Even if he were to join up with the Young Bucks again, I think that reunion would be babyface in nature more than anything else.
I'll try to be quick with my comments here. So I can definitely see in the future Adam Page going heel. I don't know if the Bucks need to be the vehicle for that to happen, partly because it seems like we always joked about the Codyverse, but there's also this kind of elite verse and now the kind of Undisputed Originals universe. And part of me just wants to kind of, you know, keep people, you know, separated and have different stories than these with the same people over and over again. Now, I don't think Paige is as cold as some people are saying, just like you. I agree with that, Zach. But it's funny you bring this up because when I was on with Wade a couple weeks ago and when I was on with Tyler Sage last Friday when we previewed Revolution, I brought up again how we're anxious millennials, right? Myself, my age group, including Adam Page. And the thing is, especially because I taught undergrad students for about 5 years, and they have so much potential, right? Millennials and Gen Z. It's just that because they have so much potential, a lot of people are scared to try because they might fail, and that holds people back. And I said, with Adam Page, it would be nice to see someone who is an anxious millennial, and instead of falling victim to their anxieties, to their insecurities, they actually overcame all that, fulfilled and exceeded their potential, and was just a confident person. And that's what we need to see from Adam Page, and we're not seeing that. But they still have time to get there. Now, the championship run hasn't been the greatest, but I also don't think we need to take it off of him so quickly yet, because I do think that with just a good promo here and followed up with another good match here and a good follow-up promo there, that's all you might need to get him back to being a hot act. And so I want to have hope, because the story that they built toward him becoming champion was great. But we've also seen in the past in different promotions that sometimes when you become a world champion your first time as the babyface, it just doesn't work out. But when you become the champion as the heel, then it all clicks. So we'll see. But I just don't think soon it needs to happen.
Yeah. Well said. Sergio, great topics. I got to get to our on-site correspondent here. But thanks very much for the call and good stuff. Call again.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too, Sergio. All right, we will go to our on-site correspondent who is in the building in Fort Myers. Alex, are you there, my friend?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, Zach?
Doing good, man. Doing good. I'm here with Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, meet Alex.
Hey.
Hey,
so Alex,
Bruce, actually, we've done a show together, so we know each other a little bit.
Oh, there you go. Perfect, perfect. Yes, Alex, we'll get to some plugs a little bit later here in your segment. But talk about your experience. You mentioned to me before we started the show and via email that this is your first AEW Dynamite event. So just high level before we get into kind of the intricacies of the show, what did you think of the experience, the crowd, just the vibe of the show, everything?
the show was a lot of fun. I will tell you that the crowd was really hyped, but the one comment I would have is I don't know if taping Dark Elevation ahead of time and then doing the 2 hours of Dynamite and then the hour of Rampage afterwards is, like, the best idea, because by the last, like, half hour, everybody's really drained. Like, you'll notice it when you watch Rampage, and I might actually take a look at it and see what the crowd looks like, because it starts to thin out a lot. Anyway, yeah, I had actually never seen an episode of Rampage or Dynamite prior to tonight. Found some cheap tickets and decided to go. And yeah, I know. I've seen two segments in AEW. One of them was CM Punk's debut, and the other one was the CM Punk Darby Allin match. That is the extent of my AEW viewing.
Wow. Okay. Well, then this is going to be even more interesting than I thought. All right. Well, so then I guess I got to take a step back here then, and just what did you think of the kind of the pace and flow of Dynamite compared to WWE or any other wrestling that you're familiar with most?
I thought they fit a lot into 2 hours. That's a good thing. I thought they did a good job with the pacing of it. The opening segment was super hot. Jericho was really, really over here, which makes a lot of sense because, you know, he is a star and he's been around for a while. A lot of the shows that I normally go to at this arena are more families and kids. And there were some kids and families tonight, but it was definitely more, you know, the 20 and 30-somethings, early 40s. So the demographic was a lot different. But no, I thought the pacing was great. It was actually a fun show. It was a fun show.
Good. You talked about Chris Jericho, so let's kind of start the topic by topic stuff here. You said he was over with the crowd, and the crowd was hot for the angle. Did they buy him as a heel at the end? Like, did he get the heat that he was looking for?
Absolutely. 1,000%. When
wow,
he came
okay,
out
cool.
the first time, everybody sang the song and was super into him. And then, you know, by the end, it was raining booze and nobody wanted to sing the song when they played it when they exited. So that was a good sign.
Yeah, really good sign. What about Eddie Kingston? How was he? How was the reaction to him?
A lot of people I heard commenting around me that he's a great talker, and he got an okay pop when he came out, but I wouldn't say it's anything to write home about. I honestly know very little about him myself, but I liked him. I thought he came off well.
Okay. Bruce, over to you for a batch of questions.
On that opening segment, did the sound of the bat actually sound as loud as it did on TV in the arena?
No, not at all. I couldn't hear it at all.
Okay.
Actually, my wife mentioned to me that it looked like he was holding back when he was swinging it. So from our vantage point, we couldn't hear it. It did come off the same way it did on TV then.
Okay, interesting. My other question would be, so Wardlow, you've never been or seen Wardlow. You've never been to an AEW show or watched an AEW show. So I don't know how much you know about Wardlow, but from what you saw tonight in his promo, what do you think?
I thought his promo was really good. I was into it because he kind of has – there's something about his look, I guess, is he's one of those people I could see myself gravitating towards if I watched the product more. I know about his previous angle, I guess. Like, I know who he is, and he was, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, the lackey for MJF. So I was well aware of that. I did not know that he turned on him the other night because I didn't see the pay-per-view, obviously, and I haven't heard that yet. So that was a surprise to me. When he came out, I kind of expected to see Punk or MJF. But no, I thought his promo was really good. And like I said, that's definitely somebody I could see myself gravitating towards. He had a certain presence about him.
Okay. My other question before we go back and let you talk about some other stuff is the main event. Both, how did the angle with the 630 through the table go, and then how did both the title change for Scorpio Sky, and then the angle afterward with Paige VanZant signing her contract on Tay Conti's butt?
the contract signing, I'm sure, was great if you were watching it on TV or up close. But from where I was sitting, I couldn't tell that's what she was doing. Like, I had to ask what the hell the piece of paper was for. Like, there was no way to tell. There was no context given if you didn't know who these people were. If you could, you know what I mean? If you weren't, like, right up in it, you would have no idea. But
okay.
The match
itself. What about
itself,
the main event in general?
The match was good, and I actually want to commend AEW because I thought for sure once they did the injury angle that he would come back and win, you know, miraculous babyface style. And I commend them that they did not do that. I liked that they switched the title. I don't understand why they still have the two belts, though. I know why they did to begin with, but I don't know why they still do.
Nobody does.
I guess WWE booking has tainted you a little bit too much, Alex, expecting the babyface to win after all that.
Yeah, again, I was super surprised and pretty happy about it. The only negative comment I have is the selling of the injury seemed to last a very long time. I assume that you
there was
got
a commercial
break
during that time. Yeah.
Yeah, I pretty much figured that, but it felt like if that was, I didn't time anything, I apologize, but I feel like that was a 10-minute match and 6 minutes of it was him selling the injury.
Yeah. Hey, real quick on Wardlow, Alex, you know, was he, like, did he get a good response from the audience? Did you get the sense that people were kind of where you were with him or not?
This is going to sound weird, but I think the hardcores in the audience were very into him, and the people that didn't know much about him kind of got into him as the promo went along. But it's not like he got a huge pop when he came out or anything like that. But I do think he won some people over, you know, myself included, with the promo. I thought he did a good job.
Okay, cool. We spent a lot of time talking about Hangman Page, and I think you're a great person to have on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So being as somebody who has watched him, doesn't know his journey, nothing. How did, like, take it from two angles. One, how did he come across, like, to you personally, seeing him for the first time, and, you know, that he's AEW's world champion? And then two, what was his reaction in the building? Did people react in a big way?
I expected him to get more. He kind of got that initial pop, and then after that was kind of it. I explained to my wife that he was their world champion. I was like, this is, you know, one of their big stars, like think like Roman or Brock or whoever. And she goes, really, that guy? So that's kind of, you know, I think he's okay, but I don't know if he's a – I know they talk about the four pillars and stuff like that, and I don't know if that's a guy I would hang my hat on. And he just, I think people appreciated the match, but I don't know if anybody saw it for more than a good match. Like, I don't think anybody was super into him, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. And I think Bruce, it kind of speaks to a lot of what we brought up, where it's like, yeah, the matches are there and it's good and he's strong, but are people, you know, behind him in a, you know, I'm going to pay big money to watch him win. And, you know, I don't know. It sounds like maybe it's fizzling a bit, not fizzled, but that it's, you know, like you kind of said, it's not as hot as it used to be.
Yeah.
Let's see what else here, Alex, in my notes to ask you about. Oh, Jeff Hardy, I'm assuming you were well aware of him. The reaction was thunderous. It sounded like when he made his entrance and his first appearance on TV. I'm assuming that was the pop of the night.
By far, him and Jericho at the top two.
Okay.
That was definitely the pop of the night. They actually, I don't want to spoil anything, but they do come out on Rampage. Again, I won't tell you the context because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. but that was perhaps even louder. But the surprise, I don't know if you guys could hear it on TV, but could you hear people chanting Jeff Hardy when Darby Allin and Sting came out?
Yes, you could. Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure because, like, it was one of those things where everybody kind of felt, like, let down. Like, don't get me wrong, everybody's happy to see Sting and Darby Allin, but it was, like, in the moment, it was like, oh, that's not what people were expecting. I'll be very honest with you guys, though. I cannot stand Jeff Hardy or the Hardy Boys, and I never have liked them, like, even since I was a little kid. So when Patrick Moynihan informed me when he found out I was going that Jeff Hardy was probably going to debut, I was like, oh, great. Okay, well, we'll see what the pop's like, I guess. But no, it was cool. It was cool because people were super into it. I thought the Holy S chant was a little weird considering the fact that I would say 80% of the audience expected him to show up.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, that's great stuff. Let's see. Bruce, back to you for some questions, if you have any.
Did they show the FTR Tully Blanchard segment in the arena right before the AHFO segment that Jeff Hardy debuted in?
There was a segment that there was what's the word I'm looking for? There was a video on the video, but there was no audio. I'm not sure if that was the same one or not. We did get an FTR segment, but I don't remember if it was during the Rampage portion of the evening or during the Dynamite portion. There was an FTR segment, but it was very hard to hear. That's the other, like, comment I have. I appreciate that the fans are like, super into it and everything, but there was a lot of periods tonight where it was really hard to hear what people were saying because of the chants and the loudness and stuff like that, which is fine. I get it. I want people to be into it. That's cool. But that was something I definitely noticed as opposed to, you know, past experiences.
Okay. The last thing that I will ask about is the tag team title match. For me going into this, I thought that it could have easily been a title change, even though the Acclaimed isn't that built well because of what happened on Sunday. But I think this was the right call. How did the whole, I know Jungle Boy's theme is over really well, but how did the whole match come across? How did Jurassic Express come across as tag team champions? And how did you take the Acclaimed as your first time seeing both Anthony Bowens and Max Caster?
I loved the Acclaimed. I thought that was super cool. Mm-hmm. I liked the entrance with the rap. I was really into that. That was, like, right up my alley as far as the stuff that I'm into. So I really liked that. I do have a question for you guys after I answer yours on that match. But I thought Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus came across good. You know, they come off as strong tag champs. I'll tell you, though, from just my one viewing of the night, I would not expect them to be tag champs very much longer. Just my personal opinion. I think they're going to go in the direction of Daniel Bryan and Moxley.
Yeah. We'll speak to that a little bit before you get into your question, because that was the last thing on my list was, you're familiar with them. What did you think of them in the AEW environment, and how did the crowd react to them as a team with William Regal in there kind of holding down the mic work?
They were both incredibly over, and so was Regal. I was talking about the parts where I couldn't hear. The first, I don't know, the whole time Tony Schiavone was introducing Regal, I couldn't hear a word he said just because of the chant for Regal. And the first, 30 seconds or so of Regal's promo, I didn't hear much of that either. I thought Regal came off well. He does He does meander a little bit. I wish he had kind of gotten to the point a little bit faster, but that's a separate thing. But no, Daniel Bryan and Moxley coming out of the crowd, I assume he does that all the time, right?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, but that they were both really over. Again, it seemed like the most over people were those kind of legacy have been around for a little bit.
Right.
guys, which I don't know if that's normal or not, but that's how it seemed. But I thought that came off really well. The only thing is I hadn't heard of the two guys that Brian and Moxley wrestled, and they didn't get an entrance. So if you were, you know, in the audience and you're privy to how things go, you knew how that match was going to turn out. Like, there was no suspense to it, which I'm sure was on purpose, but just to throw that in there.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was. I mean, they're the names of the workhorsemen, J.D. Drake and Anthony Henry, and they're kind of, I don't know, I would, Bruce, I'd classify them as kind of a jobber act. They wrestle and get some wins on kind of the lower tier shows, Dark Elevation, but that's about it at this point. So, yeah, there was no really even attempt here, Alex, to make it, like, you know, this was Squash City all the way.
Okay. I pretty much figured that, but I wasn't positive, you know.
Yeah. What was your question?
The match with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, the two guys that were at ringside, did they show camera footage of you, of the two guys at ringside during the match?
I don't believe so. Did,
are you talking about,
okay,
Christian and Caster?
I have no – Christian was there, yes.
Oh,
but there were
Christian,
two guys,
yeah,
that were sitting in the front row, and they were dressed like the – I'm sorry, what did you say their tag name was? I liked them, too, and I don't remember the name of the tag name.
The Workhorsemen?
No, they wrestled Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy.
Oh, the Acclaimed.
The Acclaimed.
Yes, the Acclaimed. There were two guys in the front row that were dressed like the Acclaimed, and they jumped the barricade at some point during the match and then ended up with the Acclaimed. And, like, I was pointing them out as plants the whole time, but I couldn't tell if they were being shown on TV or not. So I was just curious.
I didn't catch that.
No, I don't think that
maybe that was all off camera then.
I think it was, because, or unless it was in a picture-in-picture thing that you just couldn't really see, but it certainly was. It wasn't like a framed as like an angle or anything on the show. Definitely not.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. Like, I couldn't tell if I figured they were just plants, but I couldn't tell if they were like fans who hopped the guardrail, because they came over and ended up with the Acclaimed at the end, and then I guess they went to commercial break or something, because the producer guy ran down and shooed all of them away so they can get the next match in the ring. So it might have been during commercial. But it was just very odd, because they were just two guys over the top, and I'm like, okay, clearly these are plants and they're going to interfere or something. But again, I didn't know if they ever showed them on TV, because it's hard to tell.
Yeah. No, Interesting, though. All right, one more question here for you, Alex, and then we'll let you get going, man. This has been a great, a really, really great report. But what was you talked about the audience mix a little bit, but dive into that a little bit deeper. I mean, it was some families, some not. I mean, like was it, you know, a heavy male audience? Just talk about kind of the makeup of the crowd in more detail.
I would say, what would you say? It was mostly like 20s and 30s. Yeah, I would say it was mostly 20s and 30s. A lot of couples. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'll put it to you this way. The last WWE show that I went to, we had great seats. We sat like third row in this same arena. And we were like the only people that cheered Roman Reigns. You know, everybody around us was families and kids and teenagers and stuff like that. This was a lot more of I'll put it this way. There's a lot more people in this crowd that are going to hear this than there was at the WWE show, if that makes any sense to you.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Was it, I don't think it was classified as a sellout, but was it pretty full from what they had available?
Ooh, no. No. They,
oh, wow.
They closed half of the stadium. The whole part that was like where you're looking from the camera view, all of that was gone. Nobody was sitting there on that whole half of the arena.
Oh, wow.
And then the lower part where you probably saw on TV, that was full. So that wasn't like a camera trick or anything. But up where we were, seats were pretty sparse. And the tickets were cheap. Like, I'll tell you the truth, man. I paid more in fees than I did for the tickets. Like, they were super cheap.
Wow. So, is that like normal for that arena for it to be like not full? Like, does WWE sell out the hard cam side when they're there and AEW didn't, or is that type of response par for the course?
WWE would never do a TV taping at this arena because it's too small. Like, just to put it in perspective, I had my high school graduation in the same arena.
Okay.
Yes, I swear. The primary use for this arena is we have a local minor league hockey team, and that's the primary use for this arena. And the last WWE show we went to, what was it? How many people do you think were there? You think it was like 70% full?
No, 80%, 90%.
Yeah, my wife says it was like 80% full the last time we were there.
Okay.
And that was for a house show.
Oh, wow. Wow. Interesting. All right, Alex, thank you. Any final thoughts on like the show itself or your kind of just perception of AEW? I mean, did being at the show make you want to watch more?
If they can get on a streaming service where I don't have to pay $50 for a pay-per-view, I'll think about it.
There you go.
it sounds silly, but it's hard for me to get big into the product if I'm not going to see the end result because I just refuse to pay for it. You know what I mean? So that plays into my decision. Other than that, though, it was a great show, man. It was well worth the money. We had a lot of fun. It was a good time.
Good.
It was a really good time. They have a good product. I see the merit in it. You know, I'm not one of those people that I like WWE and I hate AEW. You know, I want both companies to succeed, and I want everybody to make money. And, you know, the better both products are, the better it is for us as fans. Everybody needs an alternative, so.
Yeah, you're so unreasonable, Alex. You're just so unreasonable.
I try.
All right, man. Well, yeah. Well, thanks very much for the call. Great, great stuff. You do some tremendous work with the Torch. So plug that real quick, and then we'll let you get on with your night.
Thank you. I don't know if tremendous is the word I would use, but I appreciate it, Zach. I am the SmackDown alt reporter every Friday night, so you can catch my report there alongside Wade's. Usually I have a lot more comments than he does. I tend to say as reasonable as I can, like Zach says, but maybe sometimes that spills over. I'm also the co-host alongside Patrick Moynihan on the brand new 90s Passcast, on the PW Torch Daily Cast family. Wade usually drops our show on Fridays or Saturday morning, so that's a really fun look back. We do 30 years ago in the Torch from the same week, and we're in the middle of or the beginning of 1992 right now, and we're actually going to cover Super Brawl 2 tomorrow. So it's a really good show. It's fun. Patrick and I have a lot of fun doing it, and it's a good look back. If you were watching at the time, it's cool to kind of revisit it. And if you weren't watching at the time or you were too young, you know, like I was, then it's great to, you know, take that step back into history and relive some things or live them for the first time and learn some stuff from us.
Very good. Yep. Go VIP. Or no, you don't have to go VIP and check that out. I was about to plug,
plug
VIP, but that's free on the Daily Cast. And it is a really good show. Really fun show. Really good look back. And you can kind of, you know, read along, you know, if you're a Torch VIP member with the show and kind of, go with that. And if not, it gives you a taste of what you can get, as VIP members too. So yeah, just great stuff. Make sure to check that out. Alex, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it. Hope you guys, get home safe and glad you had a good time.
Thanks, Zach and Bruce. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much to Alex. All right, we will. I'm not going to be able to get to everybody here on the calls, guys. I apologize, but we're already running long, and I got to get this off to the producers. So we will wrap up the caller portion here with Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, thanks for waiting, man. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
Oh, pretty good show at the debut of William Regal, and that brings up a question about him. What are the odds that we'll see him in a six-man tag, considering that we've seen Tully Blanchard in the ring and Sting? He, you know, can't be too good of health, you know, with Sting's neck injury. I know William Regal has a bad neck, so could you see him possibly chancing up the teaming with Brian?
Oh, man, yeah. You know, gosh, look. Bruce, I don't know where you're at with this. I mean, you never say never. So, I mean, I can't sit here and say that would never happen. But at the same time, I don't get the sense that there's really an itch for him to do that. I, with Sting, you knew that was there. You know, you knew that that's what he wanted to do. He wasn't interested in, you know, backstage role. He wanted to be in the ring. And I feel like if William Regal wanted to scratch that itch, he would have had a chance to, you know, in NXT or just somewhere along the line since he last wrestled a match. So can happen. Sure. No doubt. But I don't think we're going to see that. Bruce, what about you?
So when in professional wrestling, you always go by the Lloyd Christmas rule. So you're saying there's a chance. Okay.
Yes.
However, I'm in agreement with you because he definitely had plenty of people. Like, he could have had with Adam Cole if he wanted to in NXT easily.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Owens,
oh, yeah,
easily. Like, there were matches and people and rivalries that he had as general manager that easily could have led to these matches. I hope we don't, because I do know he has had health issues. And we would criticize, and we still criticize WWE a lot for bringing in past their prime, just barely able to move in the ring legends and pay them. If this is going to happen with AEW, we also need to criticize them if they do that. So I don't want this to happen, mostly because William Regal has found his niche in his post-wrestling career as kind of – he was an awesome general manager. I'm excited to see how he brings that to this managerial position that he's now thrust into that I don't think he's had probably in his career. So for me, I'm very excited. But to me, if they have him do a match, then a lot of that luster goes away because part of it's nostalgia because of Regal and, of course, the match with Goldberg. And I think his last match was with Cesaro in NXT, if I remember correctly. Just he did wonderful things. And I don't need him to come back. I don't need to see him have another match for me to think that he's had – that his career is finally fulfilled. You know, I think he's done an amazing job. If he wants to do that, fine. I just, going back to quality control, there's always these issues in AEW about trying to do too much with their legends or in matches sometimes, and I just don't want them to go down that road.
What did you think of his promo tonight, Regal?
Sure. As I forgot who brought it up earlier, but he did meander a little bit. But as you can also see, this was his first chance he's really had to kind of speak in a non-kayfabe way in a long time, on TV at least, about professional wrestling. And the emotions got to him. You could see, especially when he was thanking Tony Schiavone for helping him all those years ago. That's very, I said relatable a lot, but that's endearing. That's very endearing to folks because you can see and how much the business and the passion for the business means to him. It's what draws people to Eddie Kingston, right, and CM Punk. It's that passion. Danielson and Moxie, same thing. So I felt his promo tonight, if you scroll through Twitter afterwards, it was, oh, he says all these wonderful flowing things about Bryan Danielson. And it's like, oh, and then John Moxie is here too. But for me, he did, I think, aside from putting the mic in the hands of Danielson and Moxie, there was no better promo to build them up as the next force as a tag team in AEW. If they're not tag team champions by the end of the year, by the end of summer, I'm not sure if they can't extend this too much longer without them having the titles or fighting for the titles because of just the cult of personality, to borrow from CM Punk here, behind all three of these men and then together. So I'm very excited about where they're going with this. I think Regal will do Just let them fight and have Regal talk, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I thought it was a good promo, too. I think if we see this type of meandering promo, you know, 5 weeks from now, like, it's going to be like, okay, something's up. Like, he's not feeling the flow of the role, what have you. I don't think that's going to happen. But tonight, I thought you saw kind of just like the real person there. And I think that was pretty cool to see. And then he was able to bring it home and got it to a place where it's like, hey, you know, these guys are going to beat you up. You better be ready. And they're coming for, you know, they're coming for all comers. Like that, I thought that played nicely. I hope though that they can still find a way to incorporate like Moxley and Danielson into the talking of the team, because both those guys are such good talkers, especially yep. John Moxley. Like, and you don't want to like take the mic out of Regal's hand either. But I hope they find a way to kind of spread the wealth there, because there's a lot of good talking to go around with those three guys. And you know, I hate to see him sacrifice, you know, Moxley promos, because those are so good. But we'll see. Overall though, I think it was a good night for their first. Kind of their first outing. Ryan, back to you for your second question.
Some questions on the AEW ratings. Do you think Dark and Elevation get this as much credit for wins in the ratings? Because we don't see a whole lot of Dante Martin, I don't think, at least getting high-profile matches on Dynamite, yet he was ranked number two, which surprised me over like CM Punk and MJF and CM and Guevara, who are the more often featured on the two-hour TBS show.
I don't think so. I think that they count, you know, those wins count the same as Dynamite would. And kind of like I said at the top of the show, you know, they use Dark and Elevation to kind of build up people's records, you know, in a strategic way. So I think they count just the same. And I think when you look at that and you're like, okay, Dante Martin's number two, I want to say CM Punk is probably the number one in the number one slot, unless it's Adam Cole. But no, I don't think so, Ryan. I think everything counts the same. Bruce, is that kind of how you see things too?
Yes, that is exactly how it's done, because they will mention people's win streaks on Dark and they might put it on the lower third of their nameplate. But one thing that they kind of did a little bit, and now I'm not sure they're doing anymore or doing well enough, is recapping people on the results of Dark during Dynamite. They used to have a little ticker that would go through. I didn't see that tonight, but there was a lot of stuff going on, so if I did miss it, that's on me. They just need, again, quality control. Let people know how they came about getting these wins. If you just say, oh, they won on Dark, it's like, well, okay, how? Against who? When? So it's just some of these little gaps they need to fill just to make sure that the story is cohesive, and that when you have people like Dante Martin or like AQA challenging Jade Cargill a couple weeks ago, that there's an actual story and reason, so that people aren't getting or aren't watching the show like Ryan or like us are and saying, why are they getting a title shot randomly? And one of the earlier callers brought up how this had no fanfare. Tony Khan announced the matchup, I think, an hour or two before the show aired. So on Twitter, again, not everybody's on Twitter. So there's, again, they just need to shore up some of these small things, because in the long run, the macro, they're doing a good job, but it could be even better, and they could start getting towards that extra million, the next million viewers, by just one of the small things they did tonight that was really well done and very subtle, but well done, was Excalibur announcing that Tony Khan had to put in a fill-in match because the world title match didn't go 60 minutes. Just that one sentence, letting people know why that match was happening, it was great. That's what you need to do, and apply yeah. that to every aspect of your product.
Great point. I like that too. I like the buttoned-up nature of that moment. It's like, man, apply that elsewhere. And across the whole show, and, mm-hmm. and you'll have something that's a lot more buttoned up. All right, Ryan, back to you for your final question, man.
Final question is on Tully Blanchard. Do you see him managing maybe Arn Anderson's son or even his own daughter, Tessa Blanchard, if she comes in, or do you think his contract just happened to run out and they just are giving him a farewell of him getting fired?
Yeah, I don't know his contract situation. I don't think anything's been reported as far as whether he's, you know, out of contract as of today, and that's why they did that. They did that angle. So I can't comment on that with any sound reporting. My guess is that, yeah, he will move on to another team of some kind to kind of, and maybe even, you know, to go up against FTR. I don't know, but I don't think he's going to be completely, you know, dismissed from television. And if Tessa does come in, I think that's a logical place to take things. I don't know that that's on the horizon. I think she's actually under contract elsewhere, nowhere, you know, not any of the big companies, but I don't know that she's fully available right now. But it hasn't seemed like that's a fit for AEW anyway, because if they wanted her, they could have gone out and got her, and they didn't. So yep. I don't know that it's imminent, Ryan, but Bruce, what's your take?
Like you said about Blanchard, if they wanted to bring her in, they already would have. She's been she was available for a long time, but you know, if you don't know all the issues surrounding her, go look them up, but they're well documented. That's probably why she hasn't been signed, and with everything mm-hmm. that Tony Khan's gone through the last couple of months in terms of diversity issues, probably not a good idea to sign Tessa Blanchard. I think the logical step is for Tully Blanchard to find another tag team to feud with FTR, as FTR then builds their way back up to a tag team title shot. So, you know, Brock Anderson and whatnot, that could be a good way to go. He could also just find another let's say, for example, like a Private Party was available. They're not, but he could also find a tag team on that level and work to build them up as next contenders, but having their first feud against FTR. I think that's the natural progression if Tully Blanchard is still under contract. If he's not, and this is their way of writing him off, then it was a weird segment, but I don't think it's going to impact them too much in the long run.
Yeah. Yep. Well said. Ryan, thanks very much. Great topics as usual, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for making it. All right. We will end the caller portion of the show right there. Appreciate all the calls, and I am sorry for not getting everybody. We had a really high call volume tonight, but appreciate the participation and everybody who we didn't get to. I have flagged, and we'll make sure to get you guys first next time. But I do appreciate the calls. Well, let's answer a couple quick emails here, Bruce, before we put a bow on the show.
Sure.
We'll go first to Zach in Jamestown, Indiana. He says, "Hey, guys. So more of a random thought tonight as I'm watching the show. I know I'll probably get hate for it, and I'm sure it's just an innocent oversight, but I found it head-scratching that Layla Hirsch comes out in a jacket with Russia's colors and her gear underneath in camo print. Last week, people commented on the Russian flag-colored jacket and acted offended by it, so I guess it's just on my mind. Personally, I think it's most likely an oversight, but it just seems like maybe you'd want to ask her to wear different gear for now, no? Thanks, guys." Bruce, your take.
I mean, she's been wearing this gear for a while, though, so I think people are – how do I put this? It's not like red, white, and blue aren't also the colors of the United States flag, but I also understand the sentiment for people who are criticizing her, even though, again, it's not like she just randomly switched to this in the last 2 weeks.
Right.
She's been wearing these colors for as long as I can remember the last few months on Dynamite and on AEW programming. So – but I understand what the emailer is saying. Maybe you just ask her to not go so hard with the colors and just do something else. That's fine. We see wrestlers in different color variations of the gear all the time. Like Thunder Rosa tonight had different colors than she wears in all of her matches, right? So there are things you can do. It's not a video game where you have to have the same gear every, you know, every match, every, you know, week in and week out. But I think it's a little overblown, but I understand the sensitivity around it. How about that?
I'm right there with you. Like, I think it's, you know, it is an innocent oversight. And also just, hey, that's the gear that she has. That's what she's wearing. So mm-hmm. I don't really kind of have a reaction towards that. I also wouldn't have a reaction if Tony Khan was like, "Hey, Layla, you gotta change your gear. Hey, you probably didn't notice, but hey, you know, these colors, blah, blah, blah." I don't think I'd have a strong, you know, reaction to that either. So, you know, I'm kind of in the middle on it. And
I didn't even make the connection until the emailer. So,
Right, exactly. I had heard somebody mention it on Sunday night during the pre-show. I think she wore similar colors. I just think, no harm, no foul on her part, and no harm, no foul on Tony's part if he does ever ask her to make that change. But I certainly don't think, Bruce, it's a concerted effort to, support.
No.
Whatever Russia's doing right now. I don't get that sense. Okay. And then we'll finish up with an email from JB from Detroit. The email, the subject is bigger announcement, ? Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Over the last few weeks between Keith Lee, Jay White, buying ROH, and tonight, I think you could argue that the biggest of the Tony Khan announcements was signing Jeff Hardy to seemingly reunite the Hardy Boys. My question is, do you guys think that Tony Khan should have held this or held his big announcement for tonight and the debut of Jeff Hardy, as has been hinted for a while now anyway? I think of all the options, the Hardy Boys reunion was most likely to pop the biggest rating amongst the current lapsed fans. As always, love the show and go VIP. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Bruce, I think, what JB's getting at here is kind of the order of the last two big surprises, the big announcement for Tony Khan, Jeff Hardy. AEW's had a lot of big announcements recently, going back to, August when Punk made his debut.
Yeah.
It didn't stand out to me, but I think either way, nobody knew what the big announcement was last week. And unless you're going to promote Jeff Hardy, hey, it's Jeff Hardy's debuting, I don't know that you're gonna bring over any of the lapsed fans. Like, they're not gonna be just watching AEW. So you have to promote a Jeff Hardy appearance if you want that to have any impact, which they didn't do. So I kind of think the order was okay. What do you think?
I think to a certain extent, I've become a bit desensitized to all of the announcements and signings in AEW because the pace has just been so rapid. There just doesn't seem to have been time to kind of process everything because Punk debuted. And then at the next pay-per-view, you had both Cole and Danielson debut, right? So there's just been a lot going on. And Keith Lee debuts, and then you buy ROH, and then Jay White. And where's Jay White been since he debuted? And then, so there's just a lot going on. So to me, I heard the Hardy pop. I made note of it, but it didn't really strike me. And part of that might be because I'm watching it with an analytical sense for the show, but also I think I am a bit desensitized just because AEW tries to top themselves with an even bigger announcement or signing each time. And there was a lot of discussion today of why is this show so stacked after they just had a pay-per-view. And part of that's to keep the momentum going, keep those viewers who tuned into the pay-per-view who might not watch Dynamite on a weekly basis. Also okay to have your weekly show every now and then be at a B level. It doesn't always have to be at an A-plus level. You're going to burn people out that way, not just fans, but your wrestlers. So I think there could be a better pace to the announcements just because personally I do feel a bit desensitized. But I think for the core audience, it's what they want. So he has to really – it's a fine balance that Tony Khan is trying to navigate here. And I think for the most part, he's doing a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I think so too. And I think, the announcements, they've been pulling numbers – from a ratings perspective. So it's I'm not encouraging that means you have to have an announcement every week. Certainly not. And I think your point, Bruce, about, hey, it's okay for your weekly show to have its ups and downs, its peaks and valleys. I mean, you have there's filler episodes of television shows, where it's you're not always getting an action packed, tons of character development, storyline progress every single week in some of these, dramas or action shows or what have you. You're just not. And I think the same holds true here. And I think it's been okay. And I think Tony Khan, I mean, this is, you know, an exciting time for the company. It's growing right now. Like, it's getting bigger. There's talent that's, you know, available in conjunction with the company getting bigger due to some WWE releases and contracts being available. So, you know, I don't know that this pace of announcements and hiring is going to be par for the course like 5 years from now, right? Like,
yeah.
This is just that time in their company. So, hey, you know, ride it till the wheels fall off. I mean, he's a promoter at heart. So that's what you do. You promote. Bruce, we'll wrap up there. Any final comments about tonight's Dynamite? I think we hit pretty much everything here in my notes, but do you got anything before we wrap it up?
I guess there's a steel cage match to look forward to next week for the Women's Championship match, and Thunder Rosa was very excited to get in the cage, and we know the steel cage always prevents the heel's cronies from getting inside, so look forward to that.
Yeah, no, that's good point. Look, the cage match rules have really lacked meaning for quite some time, and you can blame Vince McMahon for that. But I still think, like, optically, you know, if you just taking it at face value, like, the cage match makes sense for these two right now, and I think it kind of explains, you know, the booking of the match at the pay-per-view a little more effectively, because there's a reason to have this be a cage match now if they stick, you know, to that, to booking it in a way that it solves the problem they're trying to solve with the stipulation. So I like it. I think it also keeps the match fresh. I think it should do some good business from a ratings perspective too. I think that'll be a strong main event for the show. So, are you thinking Thunder Rosa gets the win there?
I said on last Friday with Tyler that I just think Britt Baker's last several months have not been very good as world champion, and that a switch should be made. And Thunder Rosa, she's a great face, great backing from the crowd. I think that women's championship has mostly been in the hands of heels, so it'd be nice to get another babyface run after Riho's first run, and someone that Riho connected, but in a different way than Thunder Rosa connects. And Thunder Rosa's connection with the audience seems to be at a deeper level. So I think it'll be a good time to see a face women's champion AEW.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Thunder Rosa's got to win this one. You know, if you want her to be a player, you know, you kind of feed that momentum. And you know, I don't think she can lose that match and still be like a top tier. Like sometimes you got to treat the top tier like the top tier, and I think Britt Baker will be fine. Thunder Rosa gets the win, so yeah, that should be an exciting match next week. Good stuff bringing that up. All right, but we will finish it up there. Thanks to the callers, thanks to our emailers, very much appreciated. Again, Wade will be on the VIP side of things running down tonight's show, so you can check his Wade Keller hotline out there, pwtorch.com/govip. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn. You can be go VIP and check out my weekly audio show on the Canvas, talking about the art of wrestling. Take a current event from the week in wrestling and just analyze the art behind it. Bruce has been on the show, you know, we just kind of leave a lot of the discussions we've had today to the side, and we just talk about the art of wrestling. Also, make sure to check out pwtorch.com. We've got that updated daily with news, editorials, show reports from all the weekly shows, and more contributions, hits and misses columns, etc., from a really just talented group of contributors. Make sure to check that out. You can check out my receipt columns almost every day at pwtorch.com, as well as some editorials that'll be coming later this week as well. But make it a part of your day, pwtorch.com. Bruce, been an absolute blast talking with you, man. Always love doing these shows with you. Tell everybody how they can follow you on social media and how they can hear more of you and read more of you at pwtorch.com.
Thank you again, Zach. Let's just try and make sure it's not a good 8 to 10 months the next time between
absolutely.
Deal. So, as I stated earlier, I do the NXT 2.0 Alt Perspective reports every Tuesday night alongside Kelly Wells' report, so you can find mine there. I like to think that Kelly, myself, and Tyler Sage, when it comes to the play-by-play of matches, we do our best to get as much down, which I don't know why we do it. We're masochists. We have to be. It's just a lot of work. But You can find that every Tuesday night, and sometimes I will join the PWT Talks NXT show afterwards to discuss the show. On Twitter, you can find me at B_Lee253, and that's all I got.
Very good. You can follow me on Twitter at ZHeydornTorch. That's at ZHeydornTorch. You can follow the Torch brand on Twitter at PWTorch. But thanks, everybody, for listening. For Bruce, I am Zach, and we will catch you guys next time.